So there you have it. Any questions? Another challenging passage from Mark, 2 weeks in a row. More disturbing words from Jesus. This one strikes many of us, probably most of us very personally, because I dare say there's not a one of us in this room whose lives have not been touched in one way or another by divorce. This passage has helped to create a culture that tells kids their homes are broken and tells adults that they failed at marriage. For centuries, Jesus' words have been used to shame and to stigmatize. And we know that is not what Jesus does. But if you take a good look at this passage in Mark, you will see that it is our friends, the Pharisees, asking Jesus another question about the law. They do this a lot in Mark. Pharisees ask questions to try to trap Jesus. This is what Pharisees do because they are more concerned with following the rules that will make people behave themselves and keep them in line. They are more concerned with this than they are with actually living God's vision of community. And whenever these Pharisees do this to Jesus, he answers them back with scripture. And this is where we're going to start today, with the scripture Jesus cites. In particular, it is not good that the human is alone. Isn't it interesting that after all those declarations about how good creation is, amidst all the goodness God declares about creation, God has now, in chapter 2, found something that is not good. Each day of creation that is narrated for us in chapter 1 of Genesis finishes with, "And God saw that it was good." But here in chapter 2, God finds something in creation, one thing in creation, that is not good. It is not good that the human is alone. This is a profound statement about what it is to be human. From the very start of creation, we were meant to be in community. Humankind, individually and collectively, needs others of our kind and not our kind in order to be in community. It is not good for us to be alone. From the very start, from the very beginning, God seeks community. God seeks partnership for humanity. Not the isolation, the aloneness that turns into fear, suspicion, and violence. So God decides to give this human, this earthling, a helper. And we need to get a couple of things straight here right from the very start. First of all, This isn't the man, Adam, with a capital A, whom God is seeking a helper for. For whom, excuse my ending a sentence with a preposition, for whom God is seeking a helper. The Hebrew word that is used here is not masculine. It is a gender-inclusive word, Adam, small a, A-D-A-M, small a, Adam, which comes from the word Adama, which means ground, earth, humus. All that stuff from which God makes humanity and everything else. So it is this human, Adam, small a, that God does not want to be alone. Secondly, the text tells us that this helper is a partner, not a servant. Another way the Genesis text has been misused. The Hebrew word here for helper is a word that is also used to refer to God throughout the Hebrew scriptures. So there is a parity, a partnership in this community that God is creating. It is not a community of superiority or servanthood. Now it's kind of fun to imagine this next scene. God's creative work to find the human a partner. God starts by offering this nascent human every animal of the field and every bird of the air. God parades them before Adam, lets the human name each one to find a partner. It's sort of a Genesis version of Tinder. And Adam keeps swiping left. Clearly, you've all used it. You see, even though the birds and the livestock and the animals of the field were made from that same stuff as Adam, the same stuff from which you and I are made, that wasn't going to be good enough for the human community that God was creating in Eden. Just the basic elements of the earth were not going to suffice for humanity. The well-being of humanity requires a fresh, creative act of God, an act of complete and total newness. So a woman is created. First time we start getting gender-specific nouns here. The woman is created from the flesh of Adam, and now there is a man and a woman, and there are all the creatures of the earth, and creation is complete. Because it is not good that the human is alone. Creation is now fulfilled as God creates human community. Creation is complete in human community, and what God joins together, let no one put asunder. We're used to hearing these words in the context of marriage and divorce. These words that Jesus speaks in our gospel lesson, as well as the story from Genesis, are often taken to refer solely to patterns of marriage, relationships between a man and a woman, and now, thankfully, between any two people entering a marriage relationship. But we need to remember, as I said at the start, the Pharisees are asking Jesus about the law. They aren't asking Jesus about marriage. They're trying to trip him up on the law. And the law was given to the Israelites to keep their community whole. It was given to them to keep them functioning wholly as a human community. So Jesus takes that Pharisee question about the law and steers it back to the words in Genesis, when God first creates human community, a community of equality and partnership, a community living with creation in God's world on God's terms. On World Communion Sunday, we are called upon to reflect on this human community created by God. In fact, given the scripture lesson from Genesis today, I would say that we are also called upon to reflect on our connection to all of creation, human and non-human. Humans who were made from the same earth as the natural world, and our fellow human beings who were made uniquely from within one another. What God joins together, let not one of us put asunder. We know there has been a lot of separating of the community that God has joined together. There is a lot of brokenness among us. The neighbors in need offering that we are taking today reminds us of the brokenness fostered here in this country as the boundaries of our nation encroached upon the lands of Native people. There is brokenness as we humans continue to put our personal profit and our convenience above the needs of the natural world. There is brokenness in our communities based on our skin color, our economic standing, our gender, our sexuality, and now, over the last couple of years, most vividly and probably most painfully, because of our political leanings. Democrats can't even talk to Republicans, and Republicans won't even talk to Democrats. Within our own families, too, right? There is much brokenness, much separateness that has been going on for centuries. In fact, some days I think we all see far more brokenness than wholeness in this human community that God has joined together. So on World Communion Sunday, we are given the opportunity to step away from the brokenness, maybe just for a moment, to move toward the wholeness that God created for us as we gather around this table. Because when we gather around this table, we remember that Jesus, God's love made flesh of our flesh and bone of our bones, Jesus joined with us in our brokenness so that we could see, so that we could learn to live in wholeness with our sisters and our brothers and all our siblings, even if just for these moments. The bread and the juice that we share at this table are God's remedy for our brokenness. They nourish and sustain our souls so that while we might live in a broken world, we don't have to perpetuate. If we can't do this as Christians, folks, then nobody can. The litany of brokenness in our world is not going to disappear because of World Communion Sunday. I know it. God did, after all, leave all of creation in our very fallible, not capable, very fallible human hands to till and to keep. But today, around this table, we can remember God's intention from the dawn of creation. It is not good for humans to be alone. Today, around this table, we will be nourished for this work of creating, maintaining, renewing what God has joined together.